Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake. I am one of your hosts, Reza Aslan.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Rain Wilson. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Rain. Hey, this is a very special episode. This is actually a re-airing of an episode that we did a little while ago called Are You Part of Nature? Where we went to the site. It was one of the few on-site episodes we've ever done, which, by the way, we should do a lot more of those. That was fun. Why are we doing more of those?
It was super fun. It was super fun. Many of you have probably heard of the documentary, The Biggest Little Farm. Well, not far from my house in Somas, California, is the site of The Biggest Little Farm. And we went over there. We talked to John and Molly Chester, the kind of filmmaker, caterers, turned farmers,
regenerative farmers. Exactly.
And just a brilliant documentary from about, 5 years ago or so. Really insightful and beautiful to behold. And we got to go visit the pigs and the corn and the worms. There were so many worms. Do you remember the worms, Reza?
Oh, so much worm poop. So who knew how important worm poop was? Well, now we do.
Worm poop has kept our planet going.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, we would all be dead if it weren't for those worms and their poop. And, you know, here they are, just an average couple. Again, there's nothing all that extraordinary about John and Molly. They're just like, you know, an LA couple who lived in an apartment.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did what we all do every once in a while. Like you watch TV or like, you know, you watch The State of the World and you're like, man, maybe we should just go and start a farm somewhere and get out. And then you move on. You turn on Netflix and you keep going. But they actually did it. They have developed a fully sustainable farm on 200 acres outside of Los Angeles, of all places. And as Rain said, the documentary was a huge hit. In fact, it was such a hit that they did a sequel.
That's right. So just a couple months ago, The Biggest Little Farm, The Return, was released on Earth Day, April 22nd, 2022, on Disney Plus, taking you back to see all their pigs and their corn and their geese and their snails and all their worms and their worm poop and all of the other stars of the original. This is a sequel I can really get behind, Reza. Forget all those Star Wars and Marvel sequels. I'm talking about Biggest Little Farm, the sequel.
The multiverse of madness, Biggest Little Farm.
exactly.
Since there's a sequel to the documentary, we thought we would do a sequel to the podcast that we had with them to reflect and highlight, you know, the biodiversity of the planet and the interconnectedness of nature. That's, I think, the thing that really brought us to John and Molly's farm, the story that they have about how they transformed this 200 acres of dirt, basically, into, you know, a single, almost micro organism, right? These 200 acres that are completely sustained, and all the challenges that they had, and and just the beauty of it. And of course, the lesson here is the lesson that is reflected in the title of the show, which is that we are part of nature, that there is no division between us.
Reza, it's Avatar. It's just Avatar.
It's Avatar.
James
Cameron.
It's a giant tree that gives life, and the roots from the soil and the bugs support the thing, and the blue people dance around. It's all interconnected. It's such a beautiful philosophy that John and Molly have in the creation of and running of this farm. Super inspiring. It was so great. I remember it as if it was yesterday, being on that farm pre-COVID and sitting down in their living room, taking a tour and sitting down in their living room and having this really profound discussion. Really excited for you milkshakers to check it out.
That's right. And as anticipated as the Avatar sequel is, so are we filled with the same anticipation for the sequel, not just to The Biggest Little Farm, but to the podcast episode about The Biggest Little Farm. So enjoy.
Hi there, I'm Rainn Wilson.
And I'm Reza Aslan, and today we're talking about worm poop.
Wait a minute. I thought we were talking about the circle of life, mm-hmm. you know, the miracle of humans reconnecting to the earth, our mother earth, and how we can be a positive force for the beauty of nature.
Yes, yes, we're going to talk about all those things, but also worm poop. So, Rain, my family just got chickens.
We decided, chickens.
Yeah, we made ourselves a little chicken coop. We've got.
You didn't make yourself a chicken coop. You bought a chicken coop.
Well, we nailed it together. Okay. That's something.
It is something.
It came in pieces.
It's more than I've done.
And we painted it and stuff, and we filled it with chickens.
How many chickens?
Well, it started out as 8 chickens, and then one day we went in there, and one of the chickens was a bloody mess, and there was no sign of forced entry.
Mm.
So I have a feeling like all the other chickens
were chicken cannibals.
It was chicken cannibalism.
They ganged up on that one chicken.
The dark side of the circle of life that people don't talk about. The idea was, everyone kept telling us, like, oh, you're going to get all these eggs, more eggs than you could ever hope for, all these free eggs. We eat a lot of eggs in my family. As you know, I have 47 children.
Yes.
And we eat a lot of eggs.
Okay.
And you know what they didn't tell you is that chickens eat like $500 worth of food a week. Like, I mean, they just...
So you get $37 worth of eggs after spending $500
a
week.
In grain, yeah, exactly. But I feel like a farmer. I feel a little bit like a farmer.
But if you let them out to run around your yard, then they're going to eat other bugs and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, they eat those bugs. They do that. We also have bees. We have some bees. We're basically preparing for the zombie apocalypse at my house.
Wow, you got bees and you got honey and eggs in your place. That's good to know. Mental note.
What about you? I mean, you got like a little mini farm
going? We got a little mini farm. You know, we got a couple of pigs, pot-bellied pigs as pets in the backyard. My wife has got some horses and a donkey, and I think we've been over the zonkey.
Yeah, I think our listeners know
all about the zonkey. But they're on a horse farm that's a little further away from our house. But how often are you in nature, like really in nature? Do you get in touch with nature very often?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like the idea was that having chickens and having bees and like a little garden, that would you know, make me a little bit closer. It'd make me understand kind of how this whole ecosystem that is the earth would come together, but you know, not really.
What is the price that we pay by not being regularly connected with nature?
There's, I think, something magical is lost when we lose that connection. But here's the point that I'm making is that I feel like most people would say, yeah, but you're asking me to give up everything. Like, okay, so I have some chickens in the backyard. I got a zonkey in the backyard. Like, that's the closest that most of us are ever going to get to sort of truly transforming our lives to kind of live off the earth. I'm not going to get closer than that.
Let's face it, it's a lot of work.
Shit ton of work.
It's like, I have this dream of like, I want to live on a farm and animals and bees and butterflies everywhere. It's like, wait a minute. No, you've got to compost and spread manure and till and harvest and
keep out the bugs. Yeah. And hire people and fire people.
It's a lot of work. But, you know, when humanity was connected to the earth, I think there was a lot to be gained from, you know, connection to the seasons, you know, the circle of life, the cycle of life and death.
A recognition of the deep connection that we have with the other living beings on this planet. The very notion that the planet itself is a sort of a single bioorganism.
It's an ecosphere.
That we're a part of. We've lost all of that.
Yeah. And I do think that it's a crucial part of every person's journey is to a constant, like, reconnection with the natural world, because we are these meat puppets, and soon these little meat puppet suits that we're wearing are going to slough away. And that's part of the miracle of nature as well.
And so I guess the question is, what happens to us when we abandon the modern, disconnected life that we are living now and try to actually go back, right?
Right.
To go back and to our sort of prehistoric selves,
yep.
right? Let's become a part of that circle. Let's implant ourselves in that ecosystem. Let's let it control us instead of us trying to control it.
Well, as a matter of fact, dearest listener, Reza and I saw an amazing film. It's called Biggest Little Farm. It's a documentary film made by Molly and John Chester.
So cute. Such a great movie.
And it's very simple and so profound. So profound at the same time. I wept like three times in the middle of this movie. This couple are the farmers and owners of Apricot Lane Farms. It's just outside of Los Angeles. They had like 200 acres and that they brought back to life.
And they're not like professional farmers.
No.
They're just like you and me.
And they went back to the land. We had the opportunity to go visit them and check out the farm and talk to them about all of these life's big questions surrounding nature. And it was an amazing conversation and journey.
So, Molly and John, I'm curious. Molly, you had said that you had no farm experience. Why? How did you get in on this? Like, what made you think to yourself, I'm going to go from no experience with farming to creating this kind of unique farm environment?
Yeah, it didn't really happen in that kind of a thought process. It more happened from the continual solving of a problem and a need. And in my 20s, I dealt with some different health issues. And in solving that, I became really connected into how what you eat affects how you feel on a very basic level, and became then fascinated with the culinary side of that, and went to culinary school, where I began learning more and more about what nutrition and how to prepare nutritious food in the kitchen really meant. And when you get down to it there, it becomes not only about the choices you can make in a kitchen, which are like soaking, sprouting, fermenting, things like that that bring life into the food, but then what are the choices the farmer is making? Because what you start with and how nutritious that food is really, that's where you start. You only have that to start with. So from there, I then began working with clients and tried to find farmers who were raising food in this way that I wanted to feed clients and our own family. And we found a lot of really amazing farmers, but we could not find really fabulous eggs. So we started talking about, what if we did eggs and pulled out all the stops and did them just 100% the way that we would want them to be? And at the same time, we had a dog who was barking his head off, and we had this very, you know, novice idea that we could have a farm and that would solve the dog's problem. We'd have all this amazing food and grow anything that we wanted to have. And so it started there, really. And then John had a little more background in farming, which helped. He knew how to drive a tractor and some things like that. But we just met. Yeah, we met our partners, and that enabled us to do this small dream on a much bigger scale. And we just dove
in. Yeah, we thought like 5-10 acres. Yeah.
So, you know, just to be clear, that most people, when they have a barking dog problem, don't open a farm.
You see, this is what I'm telling.
I'm telling the solution.
I tell this to our couples therapist all the time.
There are other ways, I think.
The trajectory of this was fraught with issues. And
it was a dream. It was following a dream to the nth degree. And then in having a dream start to become a reality, it's like, why would you stop that? You know? And so then in that, then you have to go down that long and winding road of where it takes you, which is wrought with fear and doubt and insecurity and all of the emotional sides that you have to then develop to be able to get anywhere.
I think sometimes it's actually easier to be courageous for someone else than it is for yourself. It feels, as ridiculous as that sounds, that was the reason, that was the impetus. The courage to save Todd seemed more acceptable than the courage to live the best possible life for us.
Mm. And isn't that amazing how life, when life works that way?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, like it's all of, and nature works on this thing based on consequences, not on right and wrong. And so the consequences of our love for Todd and our commitment to Todd, as ridiculous as it sounded, that commitment led to this consequential sort of life that we get to live. And I like that because I think we learn that over and over again as farmers, that the more deeply we look into nature, the more we realize it's not about right and wrong. It's about observing the consequences of our interactions.
Well, let's go see your sacred farm. You've got a little gator out there to drive us around, and we'll do a little tour.
Let's go.
Do it.
Awesome.
You've got cows and pigs and chickens and worms and all kinds of stuff for us to see.
Yep.
Let's get our hands dirty.
All aboard.
Now, we're standing on top of a hill overlooking some orchards here. What kind of trees are we looking at down here below?
First, really important, this is Alan York Lookout. So this is named after Alan, our mentor.
What did you learn from him? And
how's that reflected here?
Yeah. I would say at the core value was maximizing biodiversity as a way to prevent epidemics of pests and disease. And by that, it means invite nature back onto the farm, rebuild it as an ecosystem, and then try to fit a farm with inside of a reawakened ecosystem.
Ooh, so it's a little bit ass backwards.
Exactly.
Build a variety of ecosystems and then build a farm inside of that.
Without creating collateral damage. And, you know, that's the negotiation every day, and be comfortable with a level of disharmony, you know, because ultimately,
so what does that mean?
We all look for perfection in farming, and that's why we have a president that wants to stop a hurricane with a nuclear bomb, and there's collateral damage from that idea.
What's the problem with that?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay, thanks.
Offline.
Thanks. And you know, I think that's the way we view farming. If there's a past, let's kill the past. But there's a collateral debt to pay. You're killing bees, which are pollinators. You're killing ladybugs, which eat variety of pests. You're killing wolf spiders. You're killing all these other things that actually help balance out the epidemic of pests and disease. But you're making a decision about one. So ultimately, and then it came down to his very simple philosophy was cultivate beauty, because within this beauty, there is infinite possibility to collaborate with nature. I mean, this is beautiful.
Collaborate with nature. That's a concept. Molly, what does that mean to you, collaborate with nature?
Collaborate with nature just means to watch it, observe it, to learn from it before you start to project your ideas onto it. And I mean, it's a force much greater than us, so we might want to listen. So he did. Alan applied then that to here. He actually had come up here when this was totally ripped out, so there was nothing but dirt. And he saw the contours of the land and then said, one, with a background in vineyards, he thought, let's plant on the contours. That helps for multiple reasons with erosion and also then beauty. And then all of the roads are put where the runoff would be, so it will gather down there. Someday we'll have a little pond at the bottom, which hasn't quite happened yet. But in here then, to maximize diversity, we have 75 different varieties, 20 types. So it's apricots up on the hill, nectarines, peaches, plums, mandarins, figs, persimmons, pomegranates, cherimoya. I mean, it goes on and on, but it's a delicious spot.
Now, you got some employees coming out of a truck over here. They look like farmer interns from like Evergreen State College.
I mean, is this, is this like a kibbutz? Are we on a kibbutz? It feels like that, doesn't it?
So what's going on over there?
That's actually, those two individuals over there are specifically focused on the restoring of habitat. We literally use habitat restoration like preemptive healthcare. Mm. So their job every day is to continue to go around and see opportunities where we can infuse native habitat that brings wildlife back to the farm into the agricultural operation.
So they're not hippie students. They're professional habitat.
They're professionals.
Restorers.
Yes.
That's Ruby.
Hey, hippie. Like
That's Ruby and Lucas. We can bring them over and say hi if you want.
Yeah, but let's see what they're working on now. Like
want,
if,
want
it's,
to
if it's yeah. if they're yeah. trying to
hey Ruby
rebuild the habitat.
Ruby. Lucas.
Hi, I'm Reza.
I'm Ruby.
Hi, Ruby.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm Rain. How are you?
Nice to meet you. I'm
hey,
Ruby.
Reza. How are you? Nice to meet you, Lucas.
Hey, Rain, how are you?
Lucas, nice to meet you.
So, yeah, we just wanted to hear about what you guys are working on in the current restoration, process that you're doing.
Well, right now up here we have this pond right around on this edge where we're standing. There's a meadow restoration project. So we put some native grass seed in and we're working on keeping that wet. But in the pond, we have these floating islands that provide habitat for birds to have nests all year round. We've got fish in there, and we've got butterflies, and yeah.
I hear mad chirping down there.
Yeah.
There's some crazy ass
There's
chirping
a lot of life
going
down
on.
There.
Yeah.
And it changes throughout the season. Sometimes there's migratory birds that come from like Canada all the way down here. And they'll just hang out for the wintertime, but this time of year, these are kind of like residents for summertime.
Hey, Milkshakers, this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and I'm really psyched that it is, because perhaps you have something interfering with your happiness or something that is preventing you from achieving your goals.
Yeah, it's called the world, Rain. The world is interfering with my happiness.
Well, oftentimes it's the world inside. It's the world inside here, the big melon that gets in our way and that holds us back. So BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy. It's psychology. It's done securely. It's online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime, send a message to your therapist.
And you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in one of those uncomfortable waiting rooms like you do with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So they make it easy and free to change therapists if that's what you need. And it's more affordable than traditional offline therapy. Plus, there's financial aid available. All of this means that BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit their website and read their testimonials because they're posted daily.
Visit BetterHelp.com/milkshake. That's BetterHelp. And join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Special offer for Metaphysical Milkshake listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/milkshake. Hey, Milkshakers. I have been flying around the world literally this summer shooting a TV show. I'm often sitting in airplanes with nothing to do and in waiting rooms and at airport gates with nothing to do. And thank God I have discovered the magical world of Best Fiends. It's what I do with my free time. I get to open my little game and visit my little friends, my little fiends, and we attack the slugs together.
Be honest, Rain, what level have you gotten to on Best Fiends
I'm cruising this summer. I'm totally cruising. I just crushed level 50, Ice Halls. where I took on a giant evil slug boss monster. I upgraded all of my little fiends to prepare, and I matched them all to take out the boss, and it was awesome.
Very good. Very good. This is great because, you know, as you know, I'm trying to get off of social media because it's just depressing me to no end. I need something else to do. I need something else to do with my free time. And the best thing about Best Fiends is that it's free to download. It's this amazing mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting levels for new adventures and challenges every single time you play. In fact, there are dozens of unique fiends to collect, so you can customize your team of fiends to defeat the menacing slugs. Power up your favorite fiends to new levels for even more powerful skills. Watch them transform as they get stronger. And with offline play, you'll never be stranded without fun, even if you're on an airplane in the middle of nowhere, like my friend Rain.
So listen, you've earned your fun time, so go to the App Store or Google Play and download Best Fiends for free. Plus, earn even more with $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Get it?
All aboard.
All aboard.
Okay, hang on, everybody. I'm
yeehaw!
Tight turn. So we're heading, this is the top secret operation of the farm right here. Could you just put some blindfolds on?
Uh-oh.
We call this the VC. We call this the VC, the Vermicompost Center. Mm. We'll wait till your tactical team gets in here.
This is where the dead bodies are buried.
No, that's over there.
Oh yeah, there's a dead.
I'm just kidding. So this is a 40-foot worm bin. It has red wiggler worms in it. And so if you dig in here...
I think I just saw a human finger.
That was mine.
Oh, okay. Wow, look at all those worms.
There's just a million of them, and they live here
up at
the top.
This is 40 feet by like 4 feet. And
a little more than
two,
I think like 6 feet.
And 3 feet deep of dirt filled with worms.
Yeah, so you feed on the top here. It's a mixture of just slightly composted manure with some juice scraps, with clippings from the farm, and then the worms crawl up to eat. And so what they leave behind is these worm castings. And when the material runs through the body of a worm, it increases the microbial content just immensely. And so that's one method to get more microbes in the soil.
Oh, look at that. So you've got one hand here with the dirt from the top of the bin.
You can see leaves and...
Yeah, leaves and chunks of fruit and things that the worms will eat. And then the soil at the bottom that has been wormified.
Mm-hmm. Basically worm poop, yeah.
Worm pooped soil looks like really rich, loamy, perfect soil.
So in one, basically in what it's here is like a tablespoon of soil, the finished product, has about 9 billion microorganisms in it after this process. Because of that, as she says, it runs through the gut of the worm, it's putting about 48 different types of bacteria back into the soil, which is why they always say, you know, worms are kind of the champion soil builder.
The unsung champions.
Yeah.
In a way, isn't the most, if you really want to like have your corporal life be of service to the world, to like just get down in there with the worms.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You could bury a body there, and fungal communities like mycorrhizae would seek out the nutrients of that body as it breaks down and take those nutrients and feed it to the root tips of plants in need of those specific nutrients, and it would reward that fungus for that service of going through and sort of breaking down your body.
And not to drag things down here, but like when you die, do you want to just be, you know, buried between the avocado trees?
It would be great.
Is it legal?
Well, there actually is.
Dig a hole.
There's
your farm.
There's places that'll do this. That'll bury you in that way. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it really is the ultimate giving back, because what we are is we're a leather bag of borrowed nutrients and minerals from the soil. Mm-hmm. That's all we are. It all came from there. Everything that we know and are came through that soil process.
Well, Rain's mostly chicken McNuggets. But yes, the rest of us.
And how did you guys find your way here?
Human leather. A human leather bag.
A human leather bag.
Yeah, a human leather. Yeah, yes. This is human leather.
Yeah.
Of, I like that.
Nutrients
I like that.
And borrowed
I have a
nutrients.
Human leather purse, actually.
I would not doubt that.
Obviously, we have a lot of conversations about the way in which human beings have transformed the earth in negative ways, but we never talk that much about the way in which the earth has transformed human beings, right, in return. And so I'm curious, being this close, right, to the experience of the earth as a single organism, right, being this close to it, being so in touch with the cycle of nature, how has that transformed you spiritually, metaphysically? I mean, yes, I know that you get less sleep and it's a lot more work and you often smell like pig shit. But beyond that, I mean, have you had a different experience as a human being?
Being in the world.
Yeah, experiencing the human
emotional,
condition.
Emotional, psychological.
Has that shifted for you?
Yes.
And how?
I think for me, one of the really dominant things that it teaches you, because nature is brutal. It's really brutal. And it also is beautiful and magical and all of those things. But you have to learn how to grieve. And I think that that's lost a little bit in our culture. I heard once that one of the most important things you can do to teach your child is to teach them how to grieve. And I think that it's very valuable, as I've seen that in myself, because you deal with death very regularly. Here you deal with loss, you deal with all sorts of different aspects. And before I knew how to do that, it resulted in anxiety. Mm. And I actually talked to a therapist one time who said, and next time you're feeling like you're going to have a panic of some sort, go and ask yourself if you're sad. And I did that and I cried as soon as, you know, the sun was going down. That's when the anxiety would come in. I went and sat in a quiet space, asked myself if I was sad, had a good cry and moved on. And then the panic attacks never happened again. And that you see, that, I mean, that's a very specific thing, but on the farm, you just face that all the time. And when you start to let that go, it's the process of release. And I feel like getting to the process of release is something that we need more in our culture of. It allows everything to be renewed again. And we kind of want to stop that pain, right. But that pain is sort of the core and the crux of a lot of beauty.
Can I just to take it one step further, it's not so much that because you're constantly surrounded by things that die,
yeah.
Is it also because you can't help but recognize that everything here that lives comes from the carcass of something that died?
Yeah. Right? Absolutely. Everything is completely impermanent. And it even, last night I was having a moment where I was coming home. My parents were just back in town. We had such a wonderful night. And I was recognizing that there was literally a panic of like, I want this to last forever, this feeling to last forever. But then in the fear of this is can't last forever, I was totally missing the experience of how wonderful that 1 second was. And so it's, yes, it's all around you is just, it's so impermanent and you're so in touch with how impermanent it is and how little you can do to stop that in any way and how out of control you really are, that your only role is to be in relationship with your life rather than being the controller of your life, then puts you in a space of humility, which allows so much beauty and emotion. And we have totally separated ourselves from the pain that's involved in that. But if we can go inside of that pain, we can all experience so much more truth and beauty. So, anywho.
It's the circle of life, one could say. Yeah.
It is the circle of life.
It's the circle of life.
I think we teach, like we're encouraging our kids constantly to find purpose and meaning. And the thing that Molly's describing is the thing that's hardest but brings us the most joy as farmers is this reconnection. But you have to be willing to accept that impermanence of life to fully reconnect with nature, because it's nature on nature's terms. And that reconnection is the thing that I think, for me, brought about a whole new level and way of looking at like who we are as people and what it means to be alive. Because oftentimes you don't want to reconnect because you don't want to go through the anxiety and the sadness of dealing with impermanence.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In Western, primarily Christian cultures, the idea of the wilderness is wrapped around issues of fear and evil, the unknown, the mysterious. It, in a way, over the last, 500-600 years, has fostered this bizarre relationship between people and nature, in which we have come to think of nature as something to be feared, or at best, a thing to be controlled
and tamed.
Yeah, and think about every documentary that's ever been made about the environment. It's divisive in its tactic of fear. It creates a polarization and an absolute helpless feeling. And that was one of our objectives. If we were going to tell this story, it's the opposite. We feel that it all turns on affection. Like, the change will come in the more deeply in love we are with our son, to see the possibility beyond the shortcoming that's right in front of us. Like, when nature challenges us, it's like your son driving your tractor into the pond and then judging that child's ability and all future contribution based on that one incident. But when you love nature and you understand it more deeply, you see infinite possibility beyond the harm that it presents to us at face value. And so we wanted to create a film that allowed people to fall in love with the same thing that we were beginning to love.
Well, I think you've touched on something that's really important about the debate around climate change, which is, it's a very much a debate about, like, should we have coal factories or should we not? Or how much should cars be allowed to pollute? Or what kind of bills should we pass? And what kind of international treaty should we sign? And does this going to stunt economic growth? Or is it going to help economic growth? All important conversations. They're all part of the conversation. But underlying all of those conversations is the fact that the Western world especially is completely disconnected from the earth and from a love of nature, a love of the planet, and a seeing of the naturalness of the planet as something beautiful and necessary. And if humanity, especially Americans, were able to get more deeply in touch with that, this wouldn't even be an issue, because we would want to be stewards and caretakers of the earth in a much deeper way.
I mean, we're talking about immune systems being rocked by the overuse of antibiotics, and people are now trying to be more preemptive in their healthcare. And just connect that to what an ecosystem is. A planetary ecosystem is an immune system, and it is fueled by biological diversity, meaning species diversity, and healthy topsoil. Those two things are the regulating bodies of our entire planet. And without that, whether climate change exists or doesn't, I know that the Earth will not be able to respond to epidemics of pests and disease if we continue to think that we can live in spite of it.
Yeah, so I mean, probably the greatest lesson I would imagine that you've learned in having this deep, intense relationship with the Earth is that the Earth itself is a organism, and just like if you have, too much duck poop in the pond, things will go out of balance. But isn't it also the case that, I mean, I think you've probably experienced this, that that nature, the earth, has a way of just fixing itself. And the way it fixes itself is by getting rid of the thing that's the problem.
Yeah.
So all of this is to say, aren't we the problem? And do you, I mean, my biggest fear isn't so much climate change or you know, things like that. My fear is that the earth at a certain point is just going to be like, you know what? Fuck you guys. I've had it.
Fuck us off.
Yeah. I mean, is this a thing that becomes very real and concrete living here?
Well, I think people often say that humans are the cancer of the earth. And I think cancer is a cell that figures out how to turn off the switches that would end its life at an appropriate time. And it lives forever and replicates and continues to live without a consciousness for its dependency on the host. And then eventually the host dies, and so does the cancer. The reality is that humans are a force of nature that are conscious of our dependency. And the more we've become conscious of our dependency, the more we've actually been able to right the wrongs of economical damage, the faster we've been able to right those wrongs with a consciousness to our effect on it. So, like, for example, it took 260 years to lose a third of the world's topsoil, deforest 46% of the trees, right, and double our carbon numbers from 200 to 400 parts per million. And on this farm, it took 45 years for them to destroy the soil before we got it. But then with consciousness, we reversed it to better than what it was in just 7. And so, to your point, humans have the potential to be cancer, but with consciousness, they can become the positive human force of nature that they are.
Part of the challenge in a farm like this is to have the strictures necessary, right, to control, to pen, domesticate, and all that stuff, but then to allow things to flourish, the animals, the trees, as though they were in the wild, right?
Well, you're looking for these methods of biomimicry, biologically mimicking the way in which nature interacts in a healthy way. You're looking for these relationships that are mutualistic in their benefiting one another by coexisting. And that is sort of the basis for symbiosis. And those three words really put together, as you begin to look at your decision-making on a farm through those lenses, it really begins to inform the boundaries and the rules of engagement.
So we've talked a lot about negative aspects of humanity's disconnection from nature and how much we can gain from a connection to the natural cycles. But where do you see the hope lying? You know, the Amazon's on fire, the Arctic, it got up to over 94 degrees in the Arctic Circle. There's more and more helplessness, loneliness, anxiety, depression among younger people. Our political system seems to be increasingly more and more broken, if such a thing is possible. Where does the hope lie?
I think as we become more conscious to the dependency that we have on the finite natural resources of this planet, the more curious we become in how it works, the more aware we become that this thing is actually trying to keep us alive. And we become an incredibly potent force of human nature when we are conscious of our ability to work as stewards alongside of it. And we haven't had a 10-year period or a 20-year or a 5-year period to experience that as a culture until now. It's happening right now. Regenerative agriculture is having an impact, and it's quantifying the data. A 1% increase in soil organic matter, which we've increased 3% here on 214 acres, a 1% increase per acre sequesters 21 tons of atmospheric carbon. People didn't know about that stuff 30 years ago. So I think it's an incredibly hopeful time to be alive.
There's this whole idea about how sustainability is about reinvigorating the spiritual connection that we have with the earth, right? This idea that when we distance ourselves from the source of our food, what we are doing is creating a barrier in our souls almost. And the flip side to that, of course, is that the more we mechanize the farming process, right, the more it's about volume instead of biodiversity, which is, you know, your whole point here. It's that
what we are doing is allowing science to dissolve the sacred. That there is, that the sacred exists precisely in our communion with the earth, in the life and death process, right? In the planting, in the sowing, in the reaping, and all of that. When I'm done every like 6 weeks or so, 7 weeks or so, I have to like get the chickens out of my coop and get all of the pine shavings and poop that they have. And then the very process of taking that stuff and then putting it into my garden and then having eventually, you know, cucumbers come out of it, and then taking that cucumber and giving it to my son, that experience for him is just mind-blowing. And it's sacred. It's a sacred experience, right? It's like, it's where I hope that he will eventually understand where God lives, you know, not in a temple, not a church, but chicken poop, inside the chicken poop. Okay, that's what I'm trying to say, is that God lives in my chicken poop.
That was beautiful.
Molly, have you experienced the sacred on this farm?
Oh my gosh. It's entirely, we're living inside of what is sacred. It's alive and around us. And this is, yeah, we're at the core of what feels sacred to me and John, I think.
So, John and Molly, we're going to start our lightning round. Molly, what does your deathbed look like?
Oh, deathbed. I want to be outside.
Covered in worms.
Yeah, not covered in worms. Or just nice breeze. Maybe outside underneath something, under the shade of a tree. That would be really nice with my kids and my dogs. And kind of just like living, not like it's sick, but it's like where you are right then. That would be nice.
John, when do you feel most connected with the universe?
Ooh, when I have discovered a way to solve a problem on the farm with something else that also appeared like a problem. And when I'm able to merge those two things together, I feel like Mother Nature.
Molly, do you pray?
Yes. Often, and sometimes not often, sometimes often, always just not with much formality. Sometimes I get on my knees in front of my bed. Sometimes I get on my knees in a pasture, and sometimes I won't pray for a couple months, and then it just brings me back to something that I need.
John, what do you think is the purpose of your life?
I think to find the deepest form of reconnection with the earth and pass that on.
Molly, what's the one thing you know for sure?
Oh, what do I know for sure? I know that when I look into my kids' eyes, I know that it's good. It, meaning something bigger, is good.
And John, what is your life's big question?
Really, to me, like, it's so hard to believe that this planet exists with the only beings, perhaps, at least that we know of, that are conscious of the entire universe. It's got to be something bigger. And so I wonder what that is, but maybe that's not important.
Reza, do you know what the hippest, coolest occupation on the planet is?
A podcast host.
Okay, good point. Second most cool, hip occupation on the planet?
No idea.
Barber.
What?
Barbers. Think. When I was a kid, barbers were losers. They were old men, usually with no hair, mm-hmm. and you get like $8.50 for, you know, trimming people and whatnot. Barbers, it was not an occupation you wanted to brag about. But now, like in LA and New York, a lot of the cities, the hipsterest people are these barbers. But you know what? I think that farmer is going to supplant barber as the coolest, hippest, and maybe most important occupation on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at the sort of mechanization of the farming industry over the last 100 years. And
mono
the
farming.
Yeah, yeah. And that we're now changing that, right? That people don't want that anymore. They want the kind of farming that the Chesters are doing. And I think, you know, it's not just about the food. It's about the connectivity that we're living on a single ecosystem, that we're intimately a part of it, and that, you know, how we live has these ripple effects for the rest of the planet.
You said ripple effects, and that's what I was just thinking about. There's reverberations to what they did far beyond, oh, we went to a farm and we had some travails and we planted things and now they grow and now we're farmers. They had experiences that connected them to each other,
yeah,
to the earth, to the natural world.
To their souls.
To their souls, to their purpose. I mean, farming kind of gave them a purpose and a direction, and you can just see it in them. They're so alive with being there and sharing both what they grow and what they've learned.
So I hope, dear listeners, that you guys were as impressed and as enthused by you know, this the story of the Chesters and their Apricot Lane farms as we were. And, you know, we want to hear from you. How do you connect with the earth? Do you find your purpose in nature? Tell us about it. You can find us on our socials at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson. Don't forget hashtag metaphysical.
And you can also email us metaphysicalmilkshake at soulpancake.com in case you have a longer question or an essay you'd like to send us.
Yeah, and plant a garden. Plant a garden, people. Thank you again to our guests, Molly and John Chester, and everyone at Apricot Lane Farms, which apparently you can actually visit. They're taking guests. See you next time.
So long.
Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick Demaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. Original music by Jeff Tang. Metaphysical Milkshake is produced by Amy S. Choi and Rebecca Lehrer of the Mashup Americans. Associate producers are Jocelyn Gonzalez, Lindsay Cradwell, Sarah Pellegrini, Mary Phillips Sandy, and Shelby Sandlin. Original music by Jeff Tang and Scott Tang.
By the way, I love the visual element as you're speaking of watching a cow shit.
It's just
right in front of us. But this is
there. It goes. I wish humans could do that. By the way, Reza,
just walk around pooping.
Just like if it's just coming out, just let it go.
I mean, you could do that, Rain. You could walk around pooping. I think it might damage your acting career, but you could.
Might help it.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.